From NPR, it's Latino USA. Coming of age is hard, but for Latina girls, it can be dangerous. Large numbers of them attempt suicide.
Like, I would look at people laughing and I'd just be like, what's wrong with me? I can't laugh. I can't be happy. Like it was just empty. Like, I would just feel empty on the inside.
Yanira is a classic case. She puts into words much of what our girls have told us, that they can't talk to their moms or their dads because they don't understand.
And that disconnect, researchers say, is why one in seven Latinas will try to kill themselves. Today on Latino USA, a special report on suicide and Latina girls. Dr. Luis Sayas will guide us, and a Dominican girl, Yanira, will tell us her dramatic story. That's coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. So who gets a say in how women decide when, how, or even whether they want to have a family? In recent debates about policy related to healthcare coverage, it seems that everyone gets a say except for women themselves. Miriam Zoila Perez is a writer and reproductive rights activist, and she joins us to talk about Latinas and reproductive health policy in the context of everything that's been going on in the past couple of weeks, which has been a lot of talk, and yet you don't really feel like you're coming out of all of this conversation smarter.
That's true. That's true.
This issue of reproductive rights affects all women the same. When you hear about it from the perspective of being a Latina reproductive rights activist, what rings for you?
I mean, there's just a lot of issues that don't get addressed in the reproductive rights conversation that impact Latinas so strongly, right? Making the connection to immigration, immigration status. I mean, you know, we live in a racist society. Obviously, race has a big impact on people's access to health care. So we hear about immigration over here, and we hear about reproductive rights and abortion over here, but that connection between the two issues and how they impact Latinas, women of color, those connections don't get addressed.
So as you've been hearing the conversation, Miriam, you know, when you're watching and you want to throw something at the television, what is it that's getting you upset about this?
Oh, my God. I mean, it depends on what I'm watching, right? I mean, in the mainstream conversation, there's just the most basic, you know, facts and understanding of what abortion services are, of what healthcare needs women have, of, you know, the most basic kind of needs that people have. And then when it comes to, you know, the more niche, like in the progressive world or among reproductive rights activists, then there's a lot of missing pieces to the conversation, that it's not just about, you know, legal access to abortion, that there's needs that Latinas, that women of color have that aren't being addressed.
So what are those primary needs?
For me, one thing I've seen working in different healthcare settings with Latinas is the language access piece is still such a huge issue. That just the not having access to someone who speaks the language that you speak with your healthcare provider, the telephone interpreting services are so lacking. And that's what most hospitals use. So women aren't even understanding the healthcare that they're receiving. And that continues to be a huge issue.
You don't really hear that conversation coming up at all.
It's surprising, right? But I mean, I've been in healthcare settings in the South, in New York City, across the board, and you just don't see Spanish language medical providers.
All right. So there are a lot of assumptions out there in these conversations around reproductive rights and women and who has a say and who has control. And a lot of these assumptions exist about how Latinas and their families feel around the question of contraception or abortion. So what does the current research say about how Latinas and their families approach issues of reproductive rights and abortion?
Right. Well, I mean, I know this experientially, but also there's new research out from Lake Research Associates and the National Latina Institute for Reproductive Health that show that a vast majority of voting age Latinos and Latinas are supportive of abortion rights, despite what the church says. They would support their family member. You know, 68% say they would support a family member or friend through an abortion. A similar percentage say that they, despite what the Catholic Church says, they support abortion rights. The fact that that's even part of the debate is almost impossible to believe. But even abortion, which is considered such a controversial issue, and, oh, Latinas, they're Catholic, they're anti-choice, we know it's not true. And we know when we get beyond the question of pro-choice, anti-choice, it becomes so much more nuanced and so much more about supporting people and their decision-making.
What are you hearing and what inspires you in terms of women who are actually getting involved and taking a stand and having their voice heard, whatever side of the issue they may come down on?
Right. Well, I mean, I'm seeing a new sort of resurgence of young women who are trying to get involved in activism through being part of healthcare experiences and trying to improve people's healthcare experiences. And this is something that I do as a doula, as a person who provides support to people during childbirth and pregnancy. But so not just leaving it at the conversation of responding to what the government is doing, but also trying to actually improve healthcare experiences for, you know, individual people. So I work with primarily immigrant Latina women in hospital settings during pregnancy and childbirth. So I'm able to be there, provide some emotional support, be a Spanish English speaker in the room. And there's a growing movement of people who are doing that kind of work. So it's not just about this bigger conversation that is male-dominated and really conservative, but it's also about how can we actually change people's direct experiences with these different moments in their lives around healthcare to try to improve them, to have some empowerment in that moment, to make women feel good about themselves, feel supported, feel heard, so that it has a kind of a trickle effect into their lives more broadly.
Well, thanks for joining us, Miriam, and thanks for the work that you do.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Miriam Zoila Perez is a New York-based writer and an activist on reproductive rights and other topics. You can read her writing at the website radicaldoula.com. For news updates throughout the week, visit us at latinousa.org or follow us on Twitter. We are LatinoUSA, all one word, and we're back in 30 segundos. Stay with us. From NPR, it's Latino USA. Mothers and daughters all have their struggles, but they can be especially fierce between immigrant Latina mothers and their American daughters. Dominican, Mexican, Cuban, Puerto Rican, and other Latinas can come of age in a kind of no man's land between their mother's homeland and their new life in the United States. Girls can often feel isolated and helpless, and they can slip into depression and then feel that the only solution is to give up. 1 in 7 Latina girls attempt suicide. That's higher than those of white or black teens. Dr. Luis Sayas started seeing this when he was a young doctor several decades ago in New York City.
It was in the mid-70s that I entered the field of social work and psychology. And one of the things that I was seeing in New York City as a young social worker was the number of times that I was seeing young Latinas coming to our outpatient mental health clinics and our emergency rooms after a suicide attempt. And it was all impressionistic at the time. I was just seeing the large numbers and didn't really understand them. So at that point, I went back and started looking at what had been published and found nothing virtually. Although I would call around town to my colleagues at other hospitals and clinics, and they would say to me, oh yeah, Luis, we're seeing the same thing, but we don't have an explanation for it, and we haven't followed the numbers, but everybody saw it.
At first, Dr. Sayas saw mostly Puerto Rican girls, and so he thought it was a problem with that community. But then he treated Dominicans, Cubans, and he heard about Mexican girls on the West Coast. The story was always the same. Girls were thinking about killing themselves. Some were trying by swallowing pills, cutting themselves with knives, or threatening to jump. Dr. Luis Sayas started to explore what exactly put these girls at risk. He interviewed hundreds of Latina girls and their families about suicide attempts, and he found a pattern.
Things like parents wanting the girl to remain at home, parents overly concerned with issues of virginity, fights, intense, long-standing conflict with their parents around dating. And there would be this kind of a gradual increase in the tensions to the point where it escalated to a very serious fight of some kind, argument. And that was then followed by the suicide attempt.
That's Dr. Luis Sayas, and we'll hear more from him later. But now, the story of one Latina teenager in New York City. In the spring of 2009, independent radio producer Laura Starcheski met Yanira, a 16-year-old Dominican-American girl who had been hospitalized during a suicidal depression. For more than a year, Yanira shared her experience in interviews. And here is Yanira's story.
The really dark time for Yanira came in the middle of winter, when she was 16. Just after New Year's Day, Yanira came home from school and lay down on her bed. She started crying and couldn't stop.
And my mom heard me. She knocked on the door. She was like, what's wrong? I was like, I don't want to die and stuff. And I just feel like cutting myself. I don't feel like there's no other solution.
Yanira had been in therapy for a few years already. She was angry a lot and had gotten into trouble at school. But therapy wasn't helping this time.
Like, I would look at people laughing and I would just be like, what's wrong with me? I can't laugh. I can't be happy. Like, it was just empty. Like, I would just feel empty on the inside.
Her mom took her to the emergency room. That's when Yanira admitted she had actually been cutting herself for a long time. She would take a knife and make neat little cuts on her arms.
Here, or here, or like here, like around my wrist area and stuff, or like more down and stuff. Like, it wasn't the big knives, it was like the little ones, the little skinny ones, I guess, but they were still sharp.
Yanira spent 3 days in the hospital that January. She said she liked the night nurse who called her sweetheart and let her stay up late talking on the phone. At home, that's against her mom's rules. And her mom's rules are where the story really starts. Yanira's mother did not want to be interviewed. Yanira says her mom is stubborn, good at getting what she wants, and Yanira's named after her.
I look like my mom, a little. Her black, 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 black hair. My hair is black, black, black. The way she smiles, I got that from her. Her sense of humor.
And what are your mom's rules about where you can go now?
I could only go wherever she goes. That's it. There's no discussions, no nothing.
No hanging out with friends. No boyfriends. Yanira can only go back and forth between her apartment and her high school.
Girl basketball team, just to know.
I think in particular Latina girls are kept home much more than, let's say, Latino boys.
One of Yanira's teachers, Caroline Worthington, says this happens a lot with Latina girls in her classes.
So one homework assignment I've given is I'll say, go outside and take a 5-minute walk. Go to the park. Anything that gets them outside. And often I'll be met with, I can't. I'm not allowed.
When Yanira's mom does send her to the corner store, she drags her feet to make the trip last. It's the only time she gets to be out in the world on her own.
Like, she thinks she's protecting me, but at the same time, she's suffocating me. Like, I always tell her that that's why I'm so rebellious, because the more you're keeping me in, like, I'm going to take out my feelings out on you.
Yanira says the reason her mom is so strict is because she's scared of New York City. Yanira's been in the city since she was 5 years old, but her mom grew up in the Dominican Republic. So in New York, she's worried that Yanira might hang out with the wrong people or get involved with guys. More than anything else, Yanira says, her mom is obsessed with her virginity.
Like, she thinks stuff about me. Like, she could say, oh, I think you're pregnant. Take a pregnancy test or something like that. And, like, one time I took it and it came out negative. And she was like, oh, today's your lucky day because it came out negative or something. And I was like, it's not my lucky day. I know I was negative. I'm not pregnant at all. My whole family have babies, so, like, I take care of half of them. So it's like, I know how hard you have to work for that. I know the responsibility.
Researchers say there are two reasons Latina girls attempt suicide so often. The complete lack of freedom is the first. The second reason is that they have so much responsibility. Since she was 15, Yanira's been expected to help run the household. She cooks dinner for her brothers and her mom. She cleans their Harlem apartment. She stays up late helping her brothers with their homework.
Remember we did that one? Why did you erase it?
Cause it wasn't right.
So to get that, what is this? You multiplied?
I needed to get the part in this one.
Yeah, so you multiplied.
It's a lot of responsibility. And her aunts and female cousins grew up the same way, so she took it in stride. But then, one day, in the fall of 10th grade, something happened that forced Yanira to grow up overnight. She had to completely take over for her mom.
Like, I still remember the first time she told me she had cancer. Like, I remember, like, I was, like, sweeping the room, and she had called me, and, like, she was in her room laying on her bed. The room was dark, like, she turned off the light. And she said, honey, come sit over here.
Yanira's mom told her she had breast cancer, a pretty bad case. Then she had a mastectomy and chemo. All of a sudden, Yanira was in charge of everything. She cooked special meals, trying to get her mom to eat when she had no appetite. Her mom came home from the hospital too weak to bathe herself. So Yanira took care of that, too.
Like, I would have never thought that I had to bathe her to a point. So it's like just seeing that, like, it surprised me. But then it's like, if I wasn't going to do it, who else was going to do it? Someone has to do it, so. And I would just tell her, like, to turn around and stuff. And, like, and then when I had, like rinse the soap off, like, I would just, she would tell me, go carefully, because, you know, it hurts when you, like, and I would just go slowly.
After a few months, Yanira's mom started getting her strength back. As she got better, Yanira got worse, sinking into the depression that landed her in the emergency room. Still, even after the hospital, the rules in Yanira's house hadn't changed. She fell behind at school, almost failing a few classes. She was desperate to get out of the house, but her mom wouldn't budge. Then, like a wish was granted, Yanira found out she was going with her mother back to the Dominican Republic for a visit. And there, all the rules are different. Her mom feels safe, so she lets Yanira do what she wants.
Next week, I'm going to DR. Next Saturday, I hope to, like, dance a lot and, like, drink, I guess. I don't know. But I want to drink. I really do. I want to drink beer, I guess.
When I saw Yanira after the trip, she told me she did get to go drinking and dancing with her mom. But the thing she seemed most excited about was just getting to act like a teenager.
Like, just go out to a friend's house and stuff and, like, eat till we barf. And, like, watch movies till, like, we get tired, sleepovers, and just everything was cool. If I would say, Mom, can I go? She'd be like, yeah, bye. When we was over there, she would always say, like, enjoy it now, because you know you're going to be locked up when we get back to New York.
When she got back to New York last fall, Yanira was locked up again, and she fell back into a depression. But Yanira's therapist intervened and brought her mom in for a session. After that, her mother started letting her go out nights. She had a 9 p.m. curfew, which she promptly broke, staying out at a party until 2 in the morning. Her mom gave her another chance, though. This summer, she was even allowed to get a job for the first time.
I always tell her, when I turn 18, I'm not going to live here. I'm going to live far away from you. I'm trying to get a job, like, to at least, like, be, like, away from the house and, like, have my own stuff.
Yanira doesn't know yet whether getting out of the house means a life of full-time fun and partying, college, or getting into nursing school, like she dreams of doing.
So your mom is still worried about you. She is. She always been worried. Because, like, she calls me her little girl and stuff, and I always fight with her. I'm like, don't call me that. I'm not little anymore. She's like, yeah, but you forget that's a parent. You're always going to be little.
Yanira turns 18 this November, and she says she's ready to make some decisions for herself. But she's got to get through one more year of high school and living with her mom before that can happen. For Latino USA, I'm Laura Starczewski.
This is not a mean mother. This is not a monster. This is a loving, well-intended mother. But the problem is that the communication is not occurring.
When we return, more from Dr. Luis Sayas on suicide attempts among Latina girls. No se vayan. You're listening to Latino USA.
Thank you.
It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. We're back now to talk with Dr. Luis Sayas about Yanira's story and about suicide among Latina girls. Sayas is a professor of psychiatry at the Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis, Missouri. He's also the founder of the school's Center for Latino Family Research at the Washington U School of Social Work. It's the only program of its kind in the nation. After years of exploring this problem, Luis Sayas believes he's beginning to understand the family dynamics that can lead to depression and suicide. Yanira's story is repeated, he says, in many of the families he sees.
It was so characteristic of the 122 girls that we studied and the countless number of girls I've treated in clinics over the years that these mothers often are not listening to their daughters, not taking into account the developmental needs of their daughters for a certain level of freedom, self-expression, and experimenting with different parts of their identity. To be Dominicana and to be Americana, to be able to, you know, love my family and love my home and love all the things about being Dominicana, but still finding appeal to what's out there in the mainstream. And it is painful to hear Yanira talk about it. We know that this mother does it out of her deep love for her daughter. This is not a mean mother. This is not a monster. This is a loving, well-intended mother. And this is a loving daughter who also has, well, you know, good intentions in her own life. But the problem is that the communication is not occurring. But it's also interesting, Maria, that Yanira tells us two things. One is when she's here and how restrictive her mother is, and what happens when they visit the Dominican Republic. I mean, she even alludes to going out and doing stuff and going dancing with her mother. That's interesting that, you know, that a mom and a daughter could do that there. But the mother changes when she's back in the streets of New York is profound. And so this mother is kind of keeping the two worlds separate rather than seeing that her daughter or that she has to help her daughter blend those two experiences so that she can be, in effect, the modern Latina woman that Yanira can and should be in this context.
The notion of being an independent young woman in this country, what you're told about that independence, that it's a good thing, right? It's a natural thing. It's something that's going to happen as a modern American woman. But in Latin America, when you talk about a modern American woman, many times they still use these terms that are kind of really passé and old, like una mujer libre, a free woman, which again immediately has another implication. What is that implication, Dr. Sayas?
The implication is that of loose morals and loose values and often a sense of betrayal to family and culture. So it's not just simply that you've lost your virginity, but there's, you know, you have brought shame, vergüenza, to your family.
I'm really fascinated with the issue of identity and how identity might play into this when you have this perception, you know, that is still around about what an American woman is. Una mujer americana. I remember hearing that when I was growing up, and it was like my family would say, and that's not who you are. Even though you're growing up in the United States, you are not an American woman per se, because an American woman is free, and that means sexually free.
Yes, that's the bottom line, that it's about sexuality. When we talk about freedom, or, you know, una mujer americana who's free, libre, does connote that of kind of also being sexually free and liberal, if you will. But what's missing is an understanding among many of our Latino parents that autonomy or independence is a natural part of adolescence. They want to think for themselves. They want to dress and behave as they wish. They also want to transfer emotions to others and experiment with those emotions and others, such as boyfriends and girlfriends, things like that. The problem often is that our parents seem to think that that kind of personal autonomy in adolescence mean that it ruptures the connection to the family. We are, as you know, Maria, very familistic in our cultures. La familia primero, antes que nada. We're all clear that family comes first. You, whatever you're going to do, first you think about what the implications are for your family. And so with that, you know, since we do place such a premium on keeping our families tightly knit, the person feels obligated to the family and to the parents, and mucho respeto toward them, the high level of reference and respect that we have for our families and parents is important. And what happens in adolescence is that gets strained. That sense of familism, the familistic tie to the family gets strained. And parents see that independence would be that a loss of that. When in fact, during the teenage years, it's a balancing of those two things.
Is there a concern then when you're kind of pointing to this is a situation that Latino immigrants in the United States, it's a kind of cultural phenomenon. Is there a risk there in basically saying that's one of the causes here?
I'm not sure I know what the risk is, except that as a scientist and as a clinician, I try to look for the truth. Now, we can argue about what truth really is, but the truth for me would be that the girls not attempt as much. And I think that's a truth we can all agree on. And so what we need to do is find out where this is coming from. We don't have any alternative explanation as to why our girls attempt more. It's not a matter of culture per se so much as acculturation and the adjustment that it takes a family to adapt to a new social and cultural environment. Incidentally, Maria, we're even among the immigrant parents, some work from North Carolina is showing that as the parents themselves, even immigrant parents, have higher acculturation to the American or the U.S. culture, their daughters are much less likely to attempt suicide. So as the parents become a little more acculturated, they get it. They begin to understand, this is what a teenage girl does here. This is what the schools are saying. This is what she's facing. And there's some value to that. So let's adapt ourselves to it.
Dr. Luis Sayas is the author of the book Letting Out Endless Words. He's the founder of the Center for Latino Research at Washington University in St. Louis and is now based at the University of Texas at Austin. Our report on Latina teen suicide was produced and edited by Katie Davis with help from Nick Blumberg. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join me again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Our year-long look at Latinos in health is made possible by funding from Pfizer. With Pfizer Helpful Answers, a family of patient assistance programs for patients in need, at PfizerHelpfulAnswers.com.
Additional support for Latino USA is provided in part by the Marguerite Casey Foundation, supporting families, leading change.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Civic Ventures, awarding the Purpose Prize to 5 people who solve major social problems in their Encore careers. Nominations at purposeprize.org. And the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives, at gatesfoundation.org. And Lumber Liquidators, offering hardwood flooring. Catalogs and professional installation details are available. 1-800-HARDWOOD. This is NPR.